Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Chatter. And our show today is on the new blood pressure guidelines. And we have a lot to talk about. We have a great guest with us, Dr. Steve Kopecky, who's actually been on our show previously talking about cardiovascular disease and risk factors and lifestyle interventions. But he's with us today as well. So we'll introduce him in just a second. As always, I like to recognize our gang that's part of our Health Chatter team. Maddie Levine-Wolf, Aaron Collins, Deandra Howard, Matthew Campbell, Sheridan Nygaard. Our second to none, these shows would not be successful without them. They do background research. They do our production. They transcribe the shows for our website in case you on the listening audience would rather read the shows as opposed to listen to them. That's available on our website. So thank you to all of you. Everybody is just super. Clarence Jones, we've been chatting a while now on all these Health Chatter shows, and we must be doing something right because we keep doing it and people are interested. And so thank you, Clarence. And then, of course, Dr. Barry Baines is our medical advisor. Keeps us honest. He crosses the T's and dots the I's when it comes to some of the medical issues, whereby Clarence and I come at it with a public health hat. Barry provides the medical hat for our show. So thank you to you as well, Barry. So today, Dr. Steve Kopecky. Steve and I go back a ways. When I headed up the cardiovascular unit at the Minnesota Department of Health, Steve was the chair of our committee, our statewide committee on addressing cardiovascular disease, and was a wonderful, wonderful chair. And we've maintained contact since then. He's a great colleague and friend. He's a consultant and chair of education in the Division of Preventive Cardiology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Serves as the director of Familial Hypercholesterolemia Statin Intolerance Clinic, which is also a particular subject that we might want to talk about somewhere down the line, you know, statin intolerance, addressing cholesterol issues. Mm-hmm. Has been at the Mayo Clinic since 1989. So he's a fixture there. Mm-hmm. But he's a wonderful speaker, has done a lot of writing, books, publications, and is a true expert in cardiovascular disease. So when the new blood pressure guidelines came out, what's it been, about a month or so, a little over a month?
Yeah.
I said, okay, is this going to, in my mind, I asked, is this going to provide us all with a little bit more confusion? And therefore, let's make sure that we don't get confused and we address all the aspects of blood pressure. And so nobody is better at it than Steve. So Steve, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
It's fun. It's nice to see you for sure. So, all right. To be honest with you, there are so many questions around all of this. So let's start with these new guidelines. So the new guidelines are basically saying, you know, different levels of high blood pressure. And, mm-hmm. you know, to be honest with you, embedded in my mind, you know, for years was the idea of, okay, a normal blood pressure is 120 over 80. Thank you very much. All right. So give us your perspective on these new guidelines and what it means going forward.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, many times new guidelines come out because there's new data that shows, hey, we got to change how we're doing things. Other times guidelines come out and say, you know, we've known this data for many years, and we need to really reemphasize it. And this guideline is a combination of both. In the old things first, the things we've known, I mean, when I was in training, that was, 35 years ago. The chair of hypertension here said the risk of heart attack and stroke go up above a top number of 115, 115. And that has not changed. It's still, your risk goes up above a systolic of 115 millimeters of mercury. But what has happened is the guidelines have started to go down, down, down in terms of the where they want treatment started and what the goals should be for treatment. I have many patients come in and say, "Oh, doctor, my blood pressure is too low. My systolic blood pressure is 112." And I'll say, "Actually, that's not too low. That's actually good." And in fact, there's no such thing as too low of a blood pressure unless you get lightheaded when you stand up quickly. The other thing the guidelines have done is say we need to be more aggressive in treating and getting the blood pressure down a little more. Many times patients feel, "Well, my blood pressure is just a little bit high. It's 135. That's just a little bit high. I don't need treatment." Well, you forget that the heart beats 100,000 times a day. So anything the heart has to do is multiplied by 100,000 times. So patients look at me like disbelief, and I'll say, "Here, pick up this pen, okay, off my desk. Now pick it up another 99,000 times today, and you'll get the idea. Your heart has to work very hard." And so the guidelines have really started to emphasize the importance of lifestyle, your weight, your exercise, what you eat, how you handle your sleep, how you handle your stress, because those are the number one causes of high blood pressure, which is indeed the number one cause, the number one reversible risk factor that we can treat to lower your risk for heart attack, stroke, erectile dysfunction, eye disease, kidney disease, all sorts of things. So the guidelines are evolving. The last thing they said was, these new blood pressure cuffs are so accurate now, these automated ones. Let's not keep doing these prolonged blood pressure readings in your office. Let's have the patient check them at home. Get a blood pressure cuff that Bluetooth to your phone. It's recorded on your phone. You can email it. You can download it to the medical record. It'll average it. It'll tell you what the goal should be. And so we're trying to take advantage of the technology that's there and is very accurate. So things have changed, but I think for the better.
So, I was in the cardiovascular unit. I'll never forget a conversation I had with my son about blood pressure. And we were talking. I said, 120 over 80 milligrams of mercury. And he looked at me like, "What are you talking about, Dad? Millimeters of mercury?" To me, quite honestly, this whole idea of, obviously, that's how it's measured, but I just wonder whether that in and of itself adds to the overall confusion or possible confusion. It's like, what the hell is 120 over 80 or 115 over 78? What the heck? And then you tell her it's millimeters of mercury, and then most people will say, "Wait a minute. I'm not taking my blood pressure. I'm just getting it digitally. It just gives me a number and that's the end of it." So address that a little bit for us, for the audience, where it all comes from.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And the blood pressure cuffs have been around for 140 years. And they used mercury because it was heavier than water, say. Otherwise, it would be the machine that would measure it would be too big. And so, 100 and 20 millimeters of mercury, is not a big something you can do within, a very small machine that can measure your blood pressure. Well, we don't use millimeters of mercury anymore. These new cuffs are all automated, and they do not use mercury, but they do translate the pressure into the old mercury standards. So, you're probably right. We could change that, but that would be a whole nother, we've had 100+ years of education. And I think the easier we make it, and the more simple we make it, and that's what the new guidelines are trying to do. They're trying to say over 120 on the top number, 80 on the bottom number is too high. And you need to start working on lifestyle, how you eat, how you exercise, watch your sodium, and if you get, and then we may need to treat you if it still remains high with medication. And you're right, it is kind of one of those doctor speak things where it's a language nobody understands, and it's quite antiquated because we don't even use those types of machines much anymore. But to change it would be a whole new educational field, you know.
I understand that. So, all right, so you alluded to blood pressure cuffs. All right, and there are all these different kinds now. There are Bluetooth enabled ones. There are ones that go around your wrist. Okay, there are some of them can be measured, from a watch. Okay, help us understand what's the best if you're going to do your own measuring. What's the best device? Truly, the best device to use to be able to communicate results to your physician.
Yeah, great question. There is a web page, validatedbp.com. Validated, like past tense, bp.com. I used to tell people to go to it. They'd have, two or three blood pressure cuffs that are validated, and they could pick one. Now they call me and say, which one of these 100 different blood pressure cuffs should I pick? Because everybody's got one. So the one I like, and we don't endorse products here, but I like it because it fits people's lifestyle, is Withings, Withings, BPM, blood pressure monitor, BPM Connect. And the Withings BPM Connect I love because it, once you Bluetooth it to your phone, and I say, if you can't figure out how to Bluetooth it to your phone, ask your 5-year-old little neighbor girl and she'll do it in about 30 seconds and it'll work great. And it's number one, an upper arm cuff. It goes here. We don't like wrist cuffs. They aren't as accurate. Watch cuffs aren't as accurate. So it's an upper arm cuff. It fits anybody's arm size because it has a little cinch that comes down. It tells you where to put it, tells you where to put the front of it. It once you turn it on the blood pressure machine, it goes to your phone. You can have you and your spouse on there, so it'll, record both of you. It will record it, it will graph it will average it, it will tell you what the goal should be, and it will email it or download it to your medical record. And it's all on your phone. We could be naked in the shower, but we still have our phone with us. You don't have to have a piece of paper that you write things down on. So that's really helpful. And they're extremely accurate unless you have a lot of irregular heartbeats, like you've got atrial fibrillation or a lot of premature ventricular heartbeats from the bottom chamber of the heart. Otherwise, it's very, very accurate. And so I tell people to get those and make sure it's an upper arm cuff. And we tell them how to check it. Sit down with your feet on the floor, put the cuff here on your upper arm, put it on your desk or on the table. And sit there for a couple minutes first, and then check it about 4 times a week at different times, only once early or late in the day, because early and late is when it's at its lowest. I tell people check it sometimes, after something incredibly stressful, like if you're crazy enough to watch the evening news. I mean, some of my patients have to take nitroglycerin to watch, watch the evening news. But check it, it's when it's stressful. And if you are working outside your home, take it to work with you. Most people go to work and their blood pressure goes up. Now, I'm not a marriage counselor, but some people come home and their blood pressure goes up. So I don't know what that means exactly, but it's good to know. And now that you can accurately measure it, you need to know what it is, because it's very treatable and it's very important to treat. And if you don't know what it is, you're really shooting in the dark.
Clarence, what do you think?
I love it. Dr. Kopecky, I do a lot of health fairs. I know that you recommended the individual blood cuff. Is there a blood cuff that you think that we could do or should utilize when we go out and do health fairs in communities? That's number one. And I have another question as well.
This one I talked about is a good one to do because you can control it. You can turn it on and off and get it going. If you have people there that know how to use the old stethoscope, with it listens to the noises in the arm, then they could do that. It can be difficult at health fairs because it's noisy. a lot of things going
Okay.
on, people are
Okay.
talking and all that. And I think the key thing for a health fair is to try to get people to sit for a minute or two first. They don't like run over and sit down real fast because it's always
Sure.
going to be a little bit higher.
Okay. So the other question I have for you is this, is that are there normal blood pressures that are not 120 over 80? Because I think that, there's some people that when they get their blood pressure taken, it's like 130, So I know we say 120 over 80, but is there some blood pressures that are not 120 over 80?
Yeah, and there are two groups that you could have a 130 over 80, or even 140 over 80, and those are people that are incredibly low risk, meaning they're low risk for heart disease. They have nothing else going on. They don't smoke. Their body weight is normal. They're they get good sleep. They eat healthy. This we're talking about, maybe less than 2% of the population fit
Yeah. Well, I'm liking this because I'm in one of those two numbers that you just named. And so I was like, oh, okay, because again, when we hear these numbers, like it's 120 over 80, and I'm like, mine never is like that.
Well,
So
the other thing is you have to be low risk, and by the calculator, the PREVENT calculator is PREVENT is the one that the new guidelines use. And once you get to be, if you're a man age 63, now you look like you're about 40, Clarence. So,
thank you, thank you. But
but once you
that's
get to 63, your risk is going to be high enough that you would not be able to do that 140 thing. You need to be closer down to 120. The other
okay.
group is the people who have had a stroke. There are certain strokes that the neurologist actually wants your blood pressure to be a little bit higher. It's okay to be a little bit higher, and that you've got to talk with your doctor about.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Barry, what do you think?
No, this is all good. I have a few questions for Steve. Number one is, 50% of people as you get older have some level of hypertension, of high blood pressure. And I know with me and some of my friends who are happen to be physicians as well, one of the things that we've noted is the changing blood pressure recommendations. And the bottom line, really seems to be lower is better. And I think that's, Steve, what you had emphasized. And you sort of address the idea of when you check your blood pressure. So I have two questions. Number one, if someone is doing some home monitoring without, being told by their doctor to, get a blood pressure cuff and start checking for whatever reason, is there a set number that, 8 blood pressure readings that are, above, 130 over, 80? Is there a number where people should start to be concerned from the point that, this needs a little bit more investigation, or perhaps, I need some treatment to lower that? Is there a sweet spot for the number of measurements that would give us a sense, without doing like 24-hour blood pressure monitoring kind of thing? So just from a practical perspective, can you just talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Barry. That's the great thing about these newer cuffs is they will record them and average them. And so a couple of things. One is, some people will come in with their blood pressure measurements, and I'll say, have you done 4 a week? They say, oh, doctor, I do 4 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. And that's a little too many, and that's you don't need that many. The second thing is we would like the majority of the readings to be below 130 on the top and 80 on the bottom, or 120 on the top and 80 on the bottom, the majority of them. And it's going to go up. It's like pulse, or that your pulse goes up at times when you're doing things, walking up the stairs or something. So that's okay, but we want to see the average because we want to see what your brain and your heart and your kidneys are seeing, because they get affected by too high of a blood pressure. So
Right.
it's check it at different times, and just make sure the average is staying under control.
Yeah. Then I want to just cut in one more thing, which relates more to treatment, but it's more about taking medications for that. I know that I've read articles over the years that seem to indicate that high blood pressure is a little bit more correlated with stroke for early in the morning, that if you have high blood pressure, that strokes occur at a higher rate early in the morning, right after getting up in the morning. And I don't know, so I'd be curious about that. But what that leads to is that if someone is on a blood pressure medicine where they take it once a day, is there a best time to take it? Because the debate is, well, you should take it in the evening before you go to bed because stroke incidence tends to be higher earlier in the morning, or does it not make a difference with the one a day medicines that, the level of the medicine in your bloodstream and its impact on blood pressure, it just won't make a difference. So I'd be curious to know where that lands in terms of blood pressure control.
Yeah, also a great question. Your risk of heart attack is highest between about 4 and 6 a.m. And blood pressure can be higher than 2. The risk of stroke isn't quite as well correlated, but clearly it does go up early in the morning. So the one a day pills will say take it whenever you remember it the best. If you remember it best, most people have an evening routine. They brush their teeth, they go to bed, put it there and take it. But many times when you start to get on two medicines or three medicines, we'll say overlap them. Take one in the morning, one in the evening. And some medicines are more likely to make you a little lightheaded. Maybe take that at bedtime. Some medicines are a little more likely to make you urinate. Take that in the morning so you're not getting up all night, urinating. But balance them out. And these medicines now work synergistically. They have different ways of lowering blood pressure. And take them at different times. And that you need to really discuss with your treating with your primary care provider. But it really can be very good to kind of balance them out throughout the day, so your blood pressure stays down throughout the whole 24 hours.
So, Steve, what about genetics? I mean,
Genetics are important. Yeah, you're right.
okay, all right, let's talk about that a little bit.
However, like breast cancer, we're all concerned about the BRCA gene that causes breast cancer. Well, about 98% of breast cancer is not genetic. And the same with blood pressure. Most blood pressure is not genetically driven. It is lifestyle driven. And what do I mean by that? Well, the sodium we take in, which is everywhere now, post-COVID, we're eating about 3.5 to 4 grams of sodium a day. We should be eating about 2 grams of sodium a day or 2,000 milligrams. And so I tell people to get the Yucca app, Yuka. It's a phone app. It's free. You use your camera, you aim it at a barcode on the food you're buying, and it will tell you what's in it. It also works for cosmetics, because you can absorb things through your skin. It'll tell you exactly how much sodium is in it. And that helps you keep your sodium down. And believe me, the sodium is everywhere. The second thing is physical activity. Physical activity is so important to lower blood pressure. 1 minute of going on the stairs, say vigorous activity, going up a flight of stairs, will lower your blood pressure significantly. Obstructive sleep apnea. About half of all people with high blood pressure have obstructive sleep apnea. About half of the people with obstructive sleep apnea have high blood pressure. So if you have OSA or obstructive sleep apnea, then you need to get it, you see somebody to talk about how you can prevent that blood, the OSA from being a problem so it can help your blood pressure, and that's really important. And the last thing is stress. Stress is, it is, I don't tell people anymore to avoid stress. It's impossible, unless you live on a mountain in Tibet or something. And even then, it's the I say learn to mitigate your stress. If you could see my office, you would be able to be here. You'd smell the aromatherapy. I turned off my classical music that's been shown to reduce seizures in people. If it can reduce seizures in people with seizures, I think it can help lower my risk, my blood pressure. I have very comfortable surroundings and pictures of family and things like that. So you really have to do all you can throughout the day to mitigate your stress. And that is extremely important. And we think stress is just part of life. We'll put up with it. Well, you don't have to. So all these things, and then finally, smoking is a no-no because it vasoconstricts or makes your blood vessels get smaller, so blood pressure is higher. And alcohol, more than about a drink a day, and there's small amounts, 3 ounces of wine for a woman, 5 ounces for a man is what, no more than that is the recommendation. And is at alcohol is metabolized, it's metabolized to a substance called acetaldehyde. Now, you've never heard of acetaldehyde, or nor of your listeners, but they've heard of formaldehyde. And it does the same thing as formaldehyde. It pickles your arteries and makes them stiff. And when the arteries are stiff, they should expand with every heartbeat because the bump, blood is pumped into the arteries. If they can't expand because they're too stiff, then the pressure goes up. So all these things are really, really important.
So, couple of shows ago, we had two guests on our show who are pharmacists. And one of the questions that we posed to the pharmacist was, should we just medicate? In other words, in one of the it was the examples that we have are weight loss medications. But I can ask you the same question. We're seeing people with more and more people with high blood pressure. So should we just medicate preventatively, proactively, and then we're off and running, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Some people have called it the poly pill. It's a
Yes,
pill
I
that has a,
remember.
a few things in it. There's a little bit of aspirin, a little bit of blood pressure lowering medicine, a little bit
Cholesterol.
of cholesterol lowering medicine. And the issue there is, people really don't like to take medicines every day. In fact, there's a thing called resistant hypertension, which is if you're on three medicines and one of them is a water pill, a diuretic called hydrochlorothiazide or HCTZ, three medicines and your blood pressure is still high, you're resistant. The number one cause of resistant hypertension is not adhering to your medical therapy, not taking your pills. And I tell people frequently, we've done some, I think, Nobel Prize winning research here at Mayo Clinic that shows that when you actually swallow the pill, it works better than if you don't. It is people, they forget, they just quit taking and they think they don't need it because blood pressure is asymptomatic. If it's a pain pill, believe me, they remember to take it. But blood pressure is asymptomatic until it's not, which means it's not means you have a stroke, you have a heart attack, or your kidneys start to have trouble and not work right. So, medicating everybody is not a bad idea. However, wouldn't it even be better if we all had a good lifestyle that we could control the blood pressure with? And unfortunately, in this country, we don't start to treat these things until you're in a fifth, sixth decade of life. And by then, you've got your habits so built, it's hard to change the habits effectively. And the studies have shown it's so much better to prevent a disease from occurring. That's how 80% of the lives we save in cardiology are by preventing a disease, preventing the blood pressure being high, preventing the arteries being narrowed, rather than wait until it happens and then treat it. And that's what most people don't really realize. They think, oh, it's, cardiologists help me because they put a stent in when I have a heart attack, or they treat my blood pressure when it's high, or they, thin my blood when I'm going to have a stroke. No, the way we do it is really prevent the disease.
There are other things. In the background of Steve, for our listeners, I see his book, Live Younger, Longer. And we talked about that on a previous show with you. And I know you're devoted to the idea of getting useful information out to people about how to adjust their lifestyles as they go through life. So, talk to me about that a little bit. It's just like lifestyle intervention. I mean, it's kind of easy to say, but it's harder to do.
You're very hard to do. And it many of us think that, okay, I have willpower, I'm going to do this. And to be honest, it has nothing to do with willpower. Willpower is a trait that humans have that is help that's made to help us survive. And so it has to be changeable, you know, because our willpower. But our habits are different. Our habits are what really drive over half of what we do every day, over half of what we eat, what we drink. Think of how you drive to work if you work outside your home. Many times I'll drive to work and I get here and I think, God, did I run that red light on Broadway and Main Street? I don't even remember coming through there because your brain loves habits because it can do something else while it's doing a habit. So the habit change is, you know, there's the oxymoron, break a bad habit, which is not true. You have to replace one habit with another. So I tell people it's small little things and be smart about it. For instance, physical activity. There have been multiple studies showing, and this is, I mean, hundreds of thousands of patients showing that, you know, activity is helpful to lower blood pressure, to lower heart attack risk, to lower death, to lower cancer and Alzheimer's. But the guidelines say do 150 minutes a week. Well, you know, in three sessions, who has, you know, over half an hour, 45 minutes, you know, to go to the gym? There have also been tens of thousands of patients in studies showing that if you do 3 minutes of vigorous activity, so you go hard for 30 seconds, get your breath back for 30 seconds again. So do that 3 times. That'll lower your heart attack risk. It'll lower your blood pressure significantly. In fact, it lowers your chance of dying of heart disease by 35%, 21 minutes a week of vigorous activity. And so a recent study showed for every 1 minute of vigorous activity you do, where you go hard for, say, you know, 30 seconds, is equal to about 5 minutes of moderate activity and equal to 150 minutes of light activity. So you can do 1 minute of vigorous or 2.5 hours of light activity. And people say, oh, doctor, I'm busy all the time. I'm walking. I'm going here. I'm going there. I'm going in the other room. You know, well, that's light activity. And that really you need to, as a human, you need to do more vigorous activity. So be smart about it.
You know, one thing that I've embraced, probably within the last 6 months, is focused breathing. In other words, and connected with yoga and all this other good stuff. But I personally have found that, regardless of the stress that's kind of with you, if you're able to just consciously put it aside for a couple of minutes and then just focus on your breathing, deep breaths in, exhale, it really helps. Now, when I say it really helps, I've done my own little personal research about that, and where I've taken my blood pressure before, I would do this conscious breathing, and then afterwards, and it's significantly different. Just it just helps you to calm down, and I think that, even if you try it, 2 or 3 times a day, where you just, okay, are you really stressed? Just stop, take some deep breaths. And I think there is something to it.
There's no doubt there is something to it. In fact, they sell machines that will help, that'll help you breathe correctly to lower blood pressure. And it kind of goes through a little mantra, you know, and do just like you do. Just take a few minutes, breathe in different ways, deep breathing in and out, and it really will lower blood pressure. And it's really amazing. And I think it speaks to two things. One is that, you know, we're not taking time to take care of our bodies. You know, and sleep is the same way. We need to really take care of our bodies throughout the day, not just, you know, 1 minute at one point in the day. And the second thing is we're all so stressed. We're all running so fast. We're all doing all these things on social media and computers and being inactive that you really need to take some time to work on these things that we know will lower your blood pressure and lower your cardiac risk, which is the number one killer now in this world.
I kind of say, what are you doing to be kind to yourself? It's
Yeah.
just simple things like that. So, Clarence, I want to pull you in here. So one of the things that we see about high blood pressure, it's connected to certain things like race. Okay. Another is pregnancy, for instance, has a tendency to raise blood pressure. So, Clarence, you work with the African American population a lot in the community. Are you seeing a lot of people with high blood pressure?
Yeah, and I think I would say I work with a lot of different groups. But yeah, when I do talk about the African American community, and Dr. Kopecky would know this, with Dr. La Princess Brewer and the faith community, we actually are going into churches and working with community members around high blood pressure, because it is a problem. It is an issue that is often not really addressed. And so yeah, it is an issue. And it is something that's often talked about, but what I really love about this conversation is that there's so many helpful tips. I don't know if you, Dr. Kopecky, I don't know if you even realize this. I've been looking up that Yaka thing, whatever that thing was that you
Yeah,
mentioned.
right.
And I thought, like, man, this is a great tool for me as a community health person to be able to have. I mean, it's you got to pay for it. But at least what I've seen. But I think the thing that it shows are the kinds of things that we need to be having, because it talks about, reading labels. It talks about the cholesterol. I mean, the sodium in a product or something like that. And I think that that's something that thank you. That was going to be my ending comment about thank you, because you're talking about apps. Like, man, this is something that will really help me to help others to address this issue around blood pressure. So, Sam, I don't know if I answered your question.
And I also want to talk,
John?
I also want to mention to our listening audience that Clarence and I initiated in the state of Minnesota, although it didn't start here, where we worked with barbers in barber shops. Where we would train the barbers on how to take their clients' blood pressure. And simple thing, and if they got their blood pressure taken, they'd get $5 off on their haircut or whatever. But even that becomes a community oriented initiative where you realize that you don't have to deal with this all by yourself. I mean, others can help you. And I think that that's an important component to this as well.
But I think again, this conversation is so important to have, because people talk about blood pressure in a variety of different ways, and in different kind of conversations. And I think that today is especially helpful for me in terms of about what you're talking about, because it really is helping to reshape some of the ways in which I will approach the community in talking about this issue. I mean, even talking about the 140 over 80, I mean, just that different kind of conversation will help people to make more informed choices.
That's a great point.
Steve, can you address links with other diseases? Like, for instance, let's say you're diabetic. Are you predisposed to a higher blood pressure?
Yeah, in general, you are. Diabetics, the number one type of diabetes now, 90% of it is type 2 diabetes, which is associated with being overweight and not as active physically in unhealthy eating. So it clearly is related. Blood pressure is related there, and can cause more problems with being in diabetics. You're at greater risk for kidney disease, greater risk for stroke, greater risk for heart attack. In fact, the number one reason for diabetics to die is cardiovascular disease. or heart and blood vessel disease, 85% of the deaths. So it's not the diabetes that kills you, it's the consequences of the diabetes.
And we're seeing more cases. Are we seeing more cases of diabetes, diabetics at a younger age?
Oh my gosh, it's incredible. I mean, our pediatricians are telling me they're seeing kids, 8, 10, 12 years old that are, on the way to becoming a type 2 diabetic. Their blood sugars are high, they're overweight, they're not as active physically. And so the secret is trying to get these kids to eat a little differently and enjoy physical activity. Many of the physical activities, when a non-white female graduates from secondary school, her physical activity goes down 90%. And it's unfortunate because PE classes, are all about winning. And if you're the last kid picked in the PE class on the playground, then you're not having fun. And you got to have fun with it. You got to enjoy it. And so the work that Clarence is doing with Dr. Brewer is unbelievably good, because there's two issues with minority populations. One is health disparity, your zip code. In fact, the new prevent risk calculator, it can include zip code you put in, and will adjust your risk for your zip code. And the second thing is health literacy, meaning that if you don't understand about the importance of taking care of some of these issues like blood pressure and what can lead to high blood pressure, then you really you don't really address it appropriately. And the earlier we learn that in life, the better.
I wonder, I think it's part of human nature that we worry about it when we have it. In other words, if all of a sudden you're diagnosed with high blood pressure, okay, now I have to start worrying about it. As opposed to being proactive with lifestyle to prevent it altogether. But I think that that's just part of how we're made up. We're more reactive than preventive.
Well, I used to call it the man thing. If a man could just ignore his risk factors, like his blood pressure or his smoking or his drinking or his lack of sleep, he didn't need to worry about it. And I actually found out they have a name for it. It's called the health belief model. If you don't believe something is bad for your health, you don't have to pay attention to it.
Correct.
And that's like sticking your head in the sand.
Well, this has been great. So, Barry, last thoughts.
Okay. Well, I think one thing that the health belief issue is also called denialism,
Right,
right? Being
exactly.
able to deny. So, I guess the takeaways from a summary standpoint regarding blood pressure is that medication isn't the be-all end-all for controlling blood pressure. And what I really liked in our conversation today is that there's really a menu of many choices that we call them lifestyle, but it's things like smoking, drinking, physical activity, diet, sleep, stress reductions. So that's like a half a dozen of them. And all of us like to have choices in our life, right? I mean, the more choices it seems, the better. So at one level, you're free to make choices. And what's most interesting is that you don't have to do, like exercising 150 minutes a week if you can't manage that, but that in an incremental way, even small amounts are helpful. And then the second piece is the complementarity of some of these choices you make. So if sort of like a recipe, a pinch of this, a spoonful of that, that if you get some exercise, if you work a little bit on reducing your stress a little bit, if you work on getting a greater amount of sleep, if you can cut back a little bit on alcohol consumption. With smoking, I'll say no smoking is the best thing. And there are a lot of resources to help people, and certainly cutting down also helps. But that one we won't go into that right now. But it's this idea that there are lots of choices we can make, and it doesn't have to be you have to go all in on these things, because then it's like climbing the mountain. And you don't have to, it's like the eating the elephant, right? How do you eat an elephant? Well, you do like one piece at a time.
Yeah.
And the idea to really help our listening audience understand that you can choose, and there are so many choices you can make that will help to lower blood pressure. And that's certainly if you already have it. And if you don't, again, if you can avoid getting high blood pressure, that's even better because that's the primary prevention that we're really after. So, Steve, thank you for the conversation. This was really, really neat and good to see you and meet you or re-meet you again. Looking forward to where this takes us. So that's what I had to say, Stan.
Thanks. One thing, I was in the grocery store yesterday, and when it gets cold out, people have a tendency to want to buy soup, just because it's it's warm. Oh my God, I was looking at the cans of soup and the amount of sodium that's that it's my God, I put the cans back on the shelf and I said, there's no way, So, one takeaway is, look at some of these labels, and don't be afraid to put it back. I mean, if it's not you're right.
Stan, I like that idea because I mean, again, I'm going to go back to Yakka, whatever we called it. Because Dr. Kopecky, you mentioned the whole idea about health literacy. The fact that we don't have enough health literacy because if we did, we probably would not, or we probably would change our diet because of all the complications of high blood pressure. And we didn't get into that very much. But you talk about heart attack, you talked about stroke, kidney diseases or failure. I actually had one of my colleagues that died. Because his kidneys failed because of high blood pressure, and nobody knew that. So we don't talk about the impact of high blood pressure, and then the other part too that a lot of guys don't talk about, families talk about is sexual dysfunction. I mean, if people knew that, they would probably eat better. I'm just saying these are the kinds of things that are impacted by high blood pressure we don't talk about. But these are things that are very, very important to people's lives. And so, to me, this is a great conversation.
Very true, Barry. And the other one we didn't talk about was dementia. Higher blood
Yeah.
pressure leads to dementia, or this forgetfulness that none of us want to have. So these things are really, really important. And Yucca app, Yuka, should be free. They should not charge you for it. It's a
Okay.
free download.
Well, that's good to know. I have to go back and change that.
Okay.
So, Steve, takeaways. What do you want to make sure that our listening audience really knows?
Well, number one is know what your, since COVID, I tell people you have a new part-time job. It's called Your Health. And you got to spend about 5, 10, 15 minutes a day with it. And one thing is get a blood pressure cuff. Measure
Yeah.
your pressure 4 times a week, different times. Know what it is. Number two is know what you're putting in your mouth. We spend hours picking out cars and clothes and shoes and all this stuff. Spend hours picking out the food that you're going to put in your mouth too. Because like you said, there's a ton of chemicals in there, not just sodium, but lots of chemicals. And these ultra processed foods, which our young people are about, 80% of their calories are ultra processed foods, have a ton of sodium in them because it's a preservative.
Yeah.
And you really got to be careful with that. And the earlier in life you kind of adjust for that, the better. And don't forget about the things like most of you mentioned things like stress. Find ways to mitigate it throughout the day. Find physical activity that you can do in small, tiny pieces. Get up every hour for a couple of minutes. We never sat in the cave all day long, 100,000 years ago. Do brief intervals. The shortest interval that's been shown to start to change your blood pressure is 2 seconds. Two
Wow.
seconds of intervals. And plus, it helps you think clear. When I'm working at home remotely, I'll get on my wife's exercise bike for 15, 30 seconds and just go hard every hour. And that's been shown to actually help you think clearer. So little things, just tiny little things, can make huge differences. And don't feel like you've got to do it all at once. Little things are really important. And finally, don't forget about your sleep. You know, we all brag, oh, I don't need that. I can do without the sleep. And we just had this very interesting experiment called daylight savings time that spring forward and fall back. You know, when we lose an hour of sleep in the spring, 1 hour of sleep, which we think is nothing, the Monday following that Saturday night, our heart attack rates go up about 25%.
Wow.
If you're in front of a judge on that Monday following that spring forward, you're going to get a stiffer sentence than if you was a different Monday. If you're on the highway driving, you're more likely to have an automobile, be involved in an automobile crash or wreck on that Monday following and loss of hour of sleep. So don't think that sleep is unimportant. Since 1991, our sleep has steadily gone down. What happened in 1991? There was a thing that came out that no one knew what it was when it was came out. It was called the World Wide Web. What is that? Well, guess what? It's our phones now, and we're on them all the time. So there are little things you can do that can really help you tremendously. And boy, don't negate, don't think they're not important, because they really are. It's just like saving for retirement. You know, you don't wait till you're 64 and a half and buy a lottery ticket. You know, you got to start, you know, when you're in your 20s, and put away a quarter every week, and it builds up.
Well, this has been great. And I hope it's been useful for our listening audience to get some clarity on, when new guidelines come out, people can get confused. But I'm hoping that this reduces the confusion. So thanks for being with us, Steve. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Oh,
Great
for our
speaking.
listening audience, we have great shows coming up. Actually, our next show that we're going to be doing tomorrow is on falls and fall prevention, especially for the elderly, and also we're going to be looking at menopause and the implications that it has for, believe it or not, linking it with high blood pressure, et cetera. So great shows coming up. So thanks to all of you and to everybody out there. Keep health chatting away.